This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home. And it's gloriously warm today. We're getting there. It's July. Let's see what the temperature is outside. It is 97 degrees. Okay, so I am going to turn on some air, which is kind of a wimp out. I'll agree, it's a wimp out. So the air is going to go whoosh, here in a second. But I'll just talk a little louder. Oh, maybe we don't need that much air. Let me just crank this down a little bit. There we go. Anyways, I'm heading home. Got a big night. I just finished visiting with my dad. We got that all taken care of. So that's all going well. It's been a good week at work. Got a lot of things done that needed to get done. I'm going to just make sure that the battery case is on here. And just, yeah, I have not stopped. Okay, whoops, sorry. If you're listening on headphones, sorry. Anyway, it's been a good week at work. All is well there. I'm on target for the writing this week. Theoretically, by Saturday night, I will have crested 100,000 words on the next book. So that's all fine. I'm still working my way through as to the exact sequence of events. And last night, I was working through some stuff, and I was a little tired, and I was thinking, okay, we don't quite have enough pop here. We're going to have to filter in some other elements. Where are we going? Because I am the first reader. And so if I don't find it interesting, I really can't expect anybody else to find it interesting. So I've gotta get that going, get that moving along. But I think we're okay. I think we're fine. I mentioned last week that I've got the right parable now. And now I just need to finish it out, figure how much I'm going to reveal where. Because this is the Revelation Opus. This is the first book of the Revelation Opus. And so things are going to start getting resolved in places that haven't been resolved. And then once we get that done, then it's the Nightmare Opus, and then we run to the end. So, 8 books of complications, and ta-da. Anyways, and I am really looking forward to being on book 23, I think it is. Because I will be retiring when I am working on book 23, so this will be fun. In fact, I think it's the second half of book 23. I'm working on that one, I think. Or book 22. I don't know. It won't matter at that point because I can write all day. So all is well. All is well with my dad. He seems to be doing fine. We're puttering along. You know, he's settling in at assisted living. All is well there. I think. We're good. I have notes today, but I may not use them. And because I may just kind of do a core dump of just kind of bringing together stuff I've thought about and talked about here and there and the other. And I've been listening a lot to the guys who are called the intellectual dark web, and they all come from different viewpoints. It's really interesting to listen to them because you got the rationalist on one side, you know, like Sam Harris, and then on the other side, you've got someone like a Jordan Peterson who's very much into archetypal stories, the word, the logos. He actually uses those terms, you know, it's the logos, and how that we are biologically evolved to respond to the logos, and it's really interesting stuff. And yet I listen to some of it, and I think in my little world, the way I think about it, I think, but it's actually better than that. So I thought, you know, maybe I should just spend a podcast talking about where I am right now and what I think is actually going on in the world and where we find meaning and where we find morality and where we find life abundant. And there are some quick, simple, fast answers to that. But if you don't believe in the foundational pieces, you know, it's just no good. So kind of have to back up and set the foundational pieces in place and then say, okay, if you're along for the ride for those foundational pieces, then here's some of the conclusions that you can reach. This is a fascinating life. This is an extraordinary thing. And there's been a lot of debate in the last many years about, are we a simulation? Are we some kind of virtual reality? Because we've seen how computers have taken us from only being able to put Pong on the screen, which is just a basic block of white moving up and down on either side of the screen, and a basic block of white going back and forth. We've gone from that to these just nearly photorealistic. I mean, these video games are amazing. So if we've gone that far in such just a few decades, if you extrapolate that out, couple hundred years, couple of thousand years, let's say there is this society out there, why couldn't it have gotten to the place where it could simulate an intelligence that would be aware of its own existence in what we would think of as some sort of a processing system? And if you really want to extrapolate and go to the level of God, why wouldn't we think about our existence as just God's form of virtual reality? And I'll come back to that in a minute. Because the nature of reality really is unknown. But you really can't start any sort of a conversation until you just sit down and say, this is what I believe about reality. Okay, well, that's fine. That's the first belief point, though. We have to acknowledge that's the first belief point. For all the materialists' first belief point is reality is real in their terminology. The material world is real in their terminology. It's not a simulation. So maybe it is, maybe it isn't. What I think's interesting about all of that, and again, this is all off the cuff, so I'm just going to run this out and see where it goes. What I think that's interesting about that is that if you believe that there are things in the Bible that are revelatory, that actually were God whispering to someone, and that can tell you the actual type of reality that we are in. The Apostle Paul makes a startling claim about Jesus Christ. In essence, it says in Colossians that he was before all things, that nothing that was made without him, and by him all things consist. Present, active, into the future, into the past. That Jesus Christ holds all things together in this reality by his power. Now that sounds like a simulation, or functionally like a simulation. What is the nature of reality? Really impossible for us to tell. It's impossible. Some people would say, well, that's more complicated than just having a real world. Well, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Occam's razor is naturally predisposed to non-supernatural things. So to use Occam's razor to prove that the world is non-supernatural is a little bit underhanded because it is predisposed by the very nature of the way it is written to define complexity as supernatural. So because it is predisposed to frown on the supernatural, to use it to prove that there is no supernatural is disingenuous. You've invented a rule that will naturally lean you towards one conclusion, and then you've applauded the fact that you've reached that conclusion. That's disingenuous. Because Occam's razor really, there's nothing that forces Occam's razor to be true. So, and for Jesus, what we experience may not be complexity at all, given that if the quantum mechanics is at all true, the realm he lives in has no past, present, future. It is all powerful. It is all knowing. The realm that he lives in to create this world as it is may be the easiest thing in the world. So anyways, as you start moving up from that, when you start talking about what is this life all about, what is our place in this life, what is morality, what is this, what is that, how can, what is reason, how do we come to all these things, what is the value of science, etc., 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 those kind of big basic questions about life. What's really interesting is if you start with the fact that Jesus holds everything together, and you factor in that Jesus, at least in some sort of semblance, has given us something that approximates free will, and that he values that, then things really start getting interesting. Because you can look in the Old Testament, and you can look and see a God that's very different from the God of the New Testament, and you can say, well, that's inconsistent. Well, maybe it's not inconsistent. Maybe it's God just working with his children as his children are able and ready to accept. As parents, we understand our children. How much more so God understands us? And so God moves forward on a continuum as his children learn more and more about life and meaning. And if he's holding everything together and guiding them and helping them, one of the things that just fascinates me about this life and about science is that in physics, which you would think would be a very experimental-oriented thing, that in order to figure out physics like chemistry and all those different things, that you would need to actually go out into the real world, that you would need to do experiments and take measurements and do graphs and all those things. And yet, the people who have made the amazing leaps in physics were people who were sitting in a room thinking about things. Why would the world be of a nature such that you could just think about things and figure out the nature of the world? Or run a few equations. Why would the world be discernible through mathematics? That seems very convenient and contrived, frankly. And yet, we have Einstein. Who is this? I'm getting my mail, one moment. Who is this patent clerk who is thinking about things? And he comes up with the theory of relativity just by thinking. That's amazing to me. That the world, I mean, you got Niels Bohr who's running all these calculations, and he uses math to describe the world, and it works really well in a lot of practical applications. That's fascinating. But even more fascinating to me is that If we believe that Jesus holds all things together, Jesus is holding every single one of those neurons in those guys' brains together. And if he's holding them together, he can influence them. So now you have a situation where you can say, well, look at what science has brought us and how science has done this for us and how science has done that for us. And it may be that these guys came up with all this stuff and that God created their brains in such a way that they had this, you know, really incredible ability to come up with this stuff. Or underneath all this stuff, he might be whispering to them, giving them an idea here, giving them an idea there, let them work it out. You know, so even the people who are saying, oh, science and the Enlightenment has led us to all this wonderful stuff. Yeah, or God has been underneath whispering at the right time when humanity was ready and has been guiding in the background. You know, the Bible does tell us that those who come to him must believe that he is and that he is a rewarder of those who diligently seek him. And when I look at this life, I see a setup that does reward those who seek him. And for those who decide that he's not out there, you know what? He's not going to rattle their world. And for the people who are going out that are trying to prove and muscle people into acknowledging that God exists, I don't think that's a good approach at all. You know, so then the question is, well, what is the basis of morality? Is it some revelation that came out of the Bible, or is there a higher manifestation of the Word? And we can see in the Bible. I don't think there's any question we see in the Bible how the Bible was created by men, where there is a joining of the divine with the human. You know, you see Paul saying things, and a lot of time Paul will say, now I'm saying this, not God. And so, you know, there is this wonderful revelation we have in the Bible, but I really believe that God is at work at the same time, and that he's whispering to people and that he's drawing people. And I think you have to factor that in, or you end up in these weird places. I think you also have to factor in the flesh. You have to factor in what Jordan Peterson would call the malevolence within us. You know, people struggle. They struggle with the problem of evil in the world. That's not God's problem. That's our problem. We are the evil in the world. And we are the evil in the world because God has given us the ability to choose evil. And we often do. So once you factor free will into it, then evil is a natural consequence of what comes out of free will, the ability to choose. And Jordan Peterson's approach then is, well, you just need to muscle through that. You know, you need to every day listen less to that malevolence within you and discipline yourself. And that works. That will work. It will work. It will. Because we have the ability to choose other than evil. We have the ability to choose other than just being self-serving. That will work. Beyond that, though, there is this other amazing thing. I was just talking to my son-in-law about that you kind of got these two halves of this abundant life thing. One is listening less to the malevolence that's within you. Because even if that's all you do, if you damp down those critical voices within you, if you damp down this assumption that everyone's out to get you, if you damp down those things, life is better. It is better. There's no question. But then the thing that I don't hear any of these guys talking about, probably because they would get kicked off the shows if they started talking about it, even if they have had experiences in it, you have this whole other thing of the abundance that is available once you learn to listen and hear the voice of the shepherd. And we've talked about that before. Jesus said, "My sheep know and hear my voice. I call them by name and lead them out." And that makes perfect sense if Jesus is holding all things together by the power of his will, and he's holding all of our neurons together by the power of his will. Of course he could alter them and vibrate them and cause us to know him more. So this whole track of we are existing within this amazing structure that Jesus is maintaining, it answers, provides answers. A whole bunch of people are not going to want the answers that it provides, but that's okay. That's okay. God will let them work through whatever ways that they feel most comfortable figuring out the answers to all these questions. But if you start with Jesus is controlling everything and holding everything together, but he also allows free will, and yes, there is a flesh, but there is also the Holy Spirit that is at work in the world and is ready to guide us and help us and whisper to us, you get this amazing existence. And you can actually fit in all the people. You know, the materialists, this is all there is. Okay, well, that's fine. I hope that works out for you. Science is great. Of course science is great. Jesus is helping people with science. They aren't even aware that he's helping them because they don't want to be aware. That's okay. He still helps them even though they aren't aware of him. You know, well, we need to do something to quiet the negative voices. Yep, that'll work too. That's your flesh. But there's also abundance. And that's what I hear missing from all of these discussions on the intellectual dark web. You have people struggling with all the problems, struggling with their unresolved issues within. Beyond all that struggling, there is a peace, there is a joy, there is abundance. And that's the part I haven't actually heard them talking about yet. But I'm waiting. Who knows? This is Phil Farron, and I have made it home.